Hey there, TMC followers. If you haven't already, subscribe to the Story of God podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. It's a daily devotional that comes out Monday through Friday, and it's recorded by myself and my wife, Janann. Enjoy the podcast.
You're listening to the Monday Christian Podcast, the program dedicated to helping you put into action the truth of God's Word that you hear on Sunday to your everyday life on Monday. And now, here are your hosts, Ezra Beyer and David Hartkopf.
Well, Dave, coming to our audience here live from Idaho Nation and Houday Nation.
You had to really bring that up, dude. Like, I was kind of conflicted because I'm kind of happy for Matt Stafford, but also I feel like there's some people around today that are a bit despondent over the football game. So
So you live in Cincinnati, but you don't really care too much.
I care about the people here, but about their. They're Bengals. Sometimes I just enjoy being contrarian. I know that would shock you, but
no, it's very surprising.
Yeah, just kind of stirring the pot a little bit just to see what happens today. So, hey, happy Valentine's Day, by the way.
That's right. We should mention that.
I got
shout
a note
out to our spouses. Yeah.
Dude, I actually got a note in my office today. Babe, stopped to say hi and felt lucky to find a pen to leave a note. You really should have someone help you decorate. what's wrong with my office? Valentine's Day. I still choose you. Love you, babe. Anyways, She's apparently not happy with my lack of decorations in here, but whatever.
Well, I guess a little spinoff. We're not talking specifically on Valentine's Day today, but we are talking about the subject of parenting. And several weeks ago, I was in Cincinnati, heard a mutual friend of ours, Jeff Keaton, speak, and he mentioned Josh Mulvihill's book. And you need to hold yours up because I put my copy on the shelf, and then my wife, she doesn't like the elder cover. She always takes the elder cover off of things, and I like the elder cover. And I was like, what did you do with the elder cover? So anyways, this is what I have now.
It was a great day. Yeah, it was a great day, him being Jeff at church and kind of sharing some things from this. Afterwards, actually, there's a young couples group, maybe a young moms group, that all of them bought the book, and they're like meeting together. And just it's been a conversation starter at our church, and I'm looking forward to interviewing today, honestly, because there's a lot in here. There's a lot of good stuff in here, and just looking through it, there's also some ouch moments for me. So yeah. I'm looking to learn today, and not just like sort of have a conversation about this with Josh.
Super practical, Dr. Josh Mulvihill, author of 6 or 7 personal books, but then 10 if you include books he's edited. And he works as the executive director of Church and Family Ministry for Renew Nation, an organization that some in our audience would be familiar with. Josh and his wife, Jen, live in Victoria, Minnesota, 5 children, and he also blogs at gospelsharedfamily.com. So, Josh Mulvihill, thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Hey, guys. Good to be with you.
Well, absolutely. It's our pleasure to have you on. So, from sunny Minnesota,
Yeah, we're a balmy 15 or so today, which is quite warmer than weekend. We'll take it.
Is there a point of winter where some people get impacted by winter very severely, others don't really mind it, but is there a point of winter where you get to it? I feel like this is it for me. This is like the worst part of winter. And we just had someone blog on our blog the other day about what do you do during dreary seasons. So I feel like Minnesota, you guys would be at the top of the list.
Yeah, you know, the cold is what's the killer. I love the snow. Yeah. So for us, man, if you just, you got to have some outside fun activities. And if you don't, then you're stuck inside all the time. So we're kind of snowmobile, bonfire, sledding, slash my oldest is just getting into some ice fishing. You know, our lakes fully freeze and we're crazy enough to go out on them and drill a hole and we've embraced the Minnesota wet winter, so come on. Go ahead.
I remember we used to do that growing up, and we would ice fish, and my neighbor would put the auger down in the ice, you know, and it would go down so deep the ice would be 8 feet thick, and he'd have to like chop out a hole around it and then keep going down. Yeah, man, the memories.
good.
That's
time.
Not fun.
Nothing like it.
We didn't have the right equipment, so we'd go out ice fishing. But I remember times where like dad or grandpa was hacking through the ice with like a hatchet so we could like fish. And then we figured out like there's guys out there with like shanties and heaters and food. And it was just like, this is an actual, like, could be a luxurious thing, but the Harkoff's notorious, like, hardcore. Like, we're just going to chop a hole in the ice with a hatchet and see what happens. Like, oh, man.
Sit on a bucket out in the wind.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not kidding. Like, that's the way. And we didn't have a fish finder, so you have no idea. Like, this could be a sandbar. We could be in, like, 5 feet of water, or we could be in a sweet spot. You just didn't know, so... Not a lot of good memories ice fishing, to be honest. So,
Josh, I feel like after I've read your book here, I've connected on you in so many different levels. And one in particular is you mentioned that one of your favorite movies, What About Bob? And David hasn't even watched it, I don't think.
Oh, no, you don't know what you're missing.
And dude, you know where that movie was filmed, too, right?
Yeah.
So Smith Mountain Lake, Virginia. I don't know if your connections with Jeff Keaton, if he's ever taken you out there by that house, but...
You know, we just went and saw it. We were there in Smith Mountain Lake this past fall, and I mentioned that in passing in an event we were doing, and it was like this audible hush came over everybody.
It's the one thing we're famous for down here.
Yeah, so we went and looked at the, you know, where they had recorded the gas station and, you know, where he got off the bus, and it's all run down. It's all condemned. And it was like, oh man, but you can still see they have the sign up there. And it's fun stuff.
If you're in any form of ministry, that's an absolute must watch video. So, okay, I guess we should probably get to the topic of hand. And 17 years of age, you had a conversation with your parents. I just want to start with that. And that kind of became the foundation for this book. Walk us through that conversation.
In between my junior senior year of high school, my parents invited me out to breakfast, and at breakfast they slid a piece of paper across the table to me, and I didn't know why we were going, but I looked at this piece of paper, and they said to me, Josh, is there anything on here that you feel like we haven't accomplished up to this point in your life? And it kind of was like my childhood and teen years flashed before my eyes because it was the things that my parents held to be important and valuable for me as a person growing into adulthood that they were working on. And so I remember the time we spent with manners and how to look somebody in the eye and shake a hand, and the specific time my dad spent helping us learn how to have our own personal quiet time, study the Bible. And there was a list of, you know, I don't know how many, but they had check marks and dates next to them when they felt like they worked on them. And so they, you know, this was essentially their invitation to assess them as parents, which was pretty unique. But it really, what it revealed was just how intentional my parents were with us as kids. And that, you know, they never had any conversations with us like, hey, you know, we're working on these specific kinds of things with you, but it was obvious that they had a plan involved with what they were doing. And I remember looking at that list and said, on here, I remember there being small engine repair, and that wasn't something I was at all gifted with. So I told them that they probably just needed to cross that off the list, and they did. But, you know, overall, kind of gave them the thumbs up, green light. And they, you know, they said, we've got about 9 months till you leave for college, and we want to put the finishing touches on our time with you before we launch you into adulthood. And so that was kind of a unique experience for me as a 17-year-old. And of course, as a pastor for about years, moving into the pastoral world, that was kind of the norm for families. Of course, you know, we think our unique experiences are pretty common, and sometimes they are. In this case, I learned that wasn't the case, and so that's part of why this book came about. It really is a testimony to my parents, just with the intentionality that they had, and realizing as a young pastor that a lot of parents are, you know, it's probably more like fly by the seat of your pants parenting, or we just go through the grind of everyday parenting. And it's not that we don't care, or that we don't have dreams or some really deep passions for our kids. But oftentimes, as we just go through our days, we miss out on so many opportunities, or we aren't as effective as we could be. And so hence the book that you have mentioned today.
You shared this with a group of people. Jeff was telling this story several years ago, potentially at this point. And the response from people, this is before the book came out, was maybe more than you expected. Why do you think that was the case? Explain that day and how that made you realize that creating this book was something you needed to do.
Yeah, they mobbed our table. They asked, can we see that list? And I did go back and ask my dad, hey, do you happen to have that still? And he couldn't find it. But Jeff just saw the need that was there and the response that was present. And really, you know, I like to refer to what we have put down simply as a guidebook. It's not a cookbook in that we're trying to put in all these ingredients and get this exact outcome. But really it's more of a, if you find a guidebook that you'd go to tour a certain city and you know how they lay out, here's all the possibilities, places you could think about, you know, you kind of create your own path and make your own adventure. That's really kind of what we see this book as. And that became pretty apparent as we had experiences like this multiple times through the years. And so COVID gave us the opportunity to really sink our teeth into doing it. My wife and I call this our COVID baby.
It was a great time to write, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. That's what came out of COVID for us.
Yep.
As quick question, Josh. So why in this cultural moment do you feel like this writing is especially important? So they mobbed you. They kind of did that at our church as well. We had a similar experience. I feel like that the pastoral staff and I think pastor was buying books for people, and the church was buying books, and a lot of interest. Why do you think now this writing is so important?
Man, we love our kids. We want the best for them. The Bible, I firmly believe that the Bible is everything that we need. God's given us in His Word. And so books like that I've written like this are helpful when they help us apply what God has given us in His Word as a principle. And one of the things that I would hear commonly from people that I pastor or from groups that I work with, they would ask, do you have any kind of discipleship plan that we could take a child from birth through the early adult years and can kind of have a pathway for that? And this is about the closest thing that I could put down on paper for that. And essentially it's kind of a scope and a sequence. If you're in the education arena, that'll make sense to you. But it's not a detailed plan that's, you just open it up and do it. But it is enough of a framework for people that haven't sat down and really spent a lot of time thinking through. And this for us, for my wife and I, this was a lot of work in the early years. We spent time when our oldest was one. We came up with a list very similar to what's in the book. And that was a lot of work, just trying to think through big picture. If we could script out what's really important for a person as they mature into adulthood, a godly adult. And so part of that is, I haven't had a model. It's a lot of work. I'm really busy just being a parent. All those, I think, add to it. And giving that to somebody that they can customize becomes really, really helpful.
You served as the pastor to children and families at Grace Church of Eden Prairie in Minnesota. So for 20 years, is that right? Yeah.
Two different churches, but about, yeah. About
okay. That. What percentage of parents would you say had a plan for how to raise their kids?
I'd say in the 10 to 25% range. And that might be really, really generous. So for me, this dawned on me as a young pastor. The first church I was at, my wife and I invited a lot of families out to lunch, primarily just to get to know them and for them to get to know us. One of the questions we asked every family was, can you just share with us what you're doing to disciple your children at home? I think it'd be good to know what you're doing. I want you to know what we're doing because we're kind of team members in this effort. And I was really shocked to find out how many parents, they didn't have, other than bedtime and mealtime prayers, which are pretty common, and the occasional faith-based conversation, again, pretty common. Any kind of regular, ongoing weekly kind of family specific habits just were not the norm. And so I remember after meeting with a lot of families at our church, it dawned on me, it's these kids aren't getting any kind of systematic anything at home, any kind of planned regular devotions, any kind of doctrinal teaching. Like, man, this is like what they get in my classrooms on Wednesday and Sunday. That's about it. And then I read a report, a study that Awana did that said that the average young person attends church 1.5 times per month today. You add up the hours per year, that's like 25 hours if it's just Sundays, if it's included Wednesdays, double that. And remember thinking, I don't think I can do this without parents really getting serious in the home. They have to, we'll be able to catch some, but I can't raise these kids myself. That's really what God's given parents, that role. And so when I was a young pastor, I realized, okay, I'm going to take very seriously what my role is as a pastor, to feed the sheep that God's given me, but also to really need to equip parents to do it in the home. And if there's Christian education in there, that three-legged stool becomes really powerful. But if there's not Christian ed, at least if the home and the church is hitting on all cylinders, that still is pretty powerful. And man, it was really hard to find churches that would get very serious about the family equipping side of things. Of course, churches, we do children and youth ministry better today than we've ever done in the history of Christianity. I mean, you think about the amount of money we spend on staffing and curriculum and programming, and then you look at the results that we get from that. If we're honest and you put up the hood, and you look at the dropout statistics and those who walk away from their faith at some point in their life, the results aren't good. And I think we need to ask why.
Josh, do you think one of the reasons that parents struggle with implementing, maybe you could say the phrase Christian worldview in their home, is they want their kids to be critical thinkers? I've heard this line of reasoning how many times? I want my kids to be critical thinkers, to think for themselves, to think through religion. I don't want to impose my ideals on them. Is that something you run into often with parents? And what do you say to parents who have that objection?
Heard it many times. I think it's extremely unwise. And I'm saying that in the kindest way. I'm saying that because my heart is that I want every child, every young person to choose Christ. But what we see is that that's not the attitude of the secular world that we live in. They are absolutely trying to go after the hearts and the minds of our kids, to shape them to think in worldly ways. And if we're not, then someone else is. And I think it's just contrary. That kind of thinking is just contrary to what we see in Scripture. And I'll just give you an example. So Ephesians 6, for example, says, "Fathers, raise your children in the instruction of the Lord." That to me says that basic, just that basic kind of passage says that's the exact antithesis of let them be critical thinkers on their own. We have a body of beliefs and truths that we're trying to impart to our children. Even the book of Proverbs, you know, my son, listen to my instruction and to your mother's teaching. I mean, there's just you just look at the body of what we see scripturally, and there is very much this, there is a right way to think and to live and to act. And we're teaching that both in word and in action. And I, you know, and if we don't, we just create a void in our kids' minds and hearts that gets filled by other things. And most of the time, they're not in alignment with God's word. And so then we're trying to play catch up later and to undo things. So, I'd get parents in the, usually it was about the eighth or ninth grade age range, when kids got tall enough to look mom and dad in the eye and say, you know, it's time to go to church. And their child would say, I'm not going. I don't like this stuff. Make me. And then you'd get mom and dad coming and say, you know, what happened? All of a sudden. And it never happens all of a sudden. It is years usually in the works as those seeds are planted early and they germinate and they grow. And so I'd encourage families, parents, early and often, we want to be the first and the loudest voice in our kids' lives. And if we, you know, the best way to push out a bad worldview is to fill their minds and hearts with the true worldview. And if we don't, then it just gets filled with other stuff.
So I love what you're saying. My question, I have like a two-part question. Actually, just a comment when you were mentioning the number of hours in church. I think it was, I was in a session a couple years ago with David Kinnaman from Barna, and he mentioned something about, I want to say it was like 2,700 hours a year, the average teen, I think, was spending on front of a screen. And just the point that the discipling that's happening with technology, if you just turn people loose that screens disciple, and just the importance of a lot of what you're saying. My question is this, for rightly should be cautious about somebody else indoctrinating our kids with some sort of secular worldview that goes against the scriptures. But sometimes when I've heard this presented, it's sort of, there's a lot of fear. And so fear becomes the motivating factor for these parents to start discipling their kids. And it's never enough. And then they can never quite get enough. And the solution maybe is like, we need to become sort of Essene and pull our kids out of the culture and pull them away. And, you know, find the back 40 somewhere where we don't see anybody anymore, and we can like have our own little insulated holy club. Talk to us about maybe what does it look like for a family to be in the world but not of the world. So like still in culture, but with a mindset, a kingdom mindset that's been fostered at home. Maybe that would be my concern. It seems like there's like this pendulum. Either we're all about being in culture and not having this really solid Christian worldview, or we're so consumed and fearful that we end up pulling out of culture almost completely. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, just I'm going to tack onto that real quick. If you're listening to this, watching this right now, feel free to leave a question or comment and we'll try to get to it as well. So Josh, go ahead.
I love that question. And I think it is a real reality for many families. And I want to encourage that a fear-based approach to parenting should not be the driving motivator. I think there's always wisdom in being cautious and prudent as a parent and putting boundaries up, because there are things in digital media, screens, education, other places that we do want to keep out. But it is unwise for us to isolate to the point that our kids aren't interacting with the world. So for us, what we've done as parents is, as our kids were younger, the boundaries were much smaller and the opportunities for our kids were much more limited. But the teaching on specific subjects was very intentional at that age, so that we wanted to introduce them to, the ideal is you introduce your kids to the biblical truth And then you let them become exposed to some of the things that the world is saying as you release those boundaries and they become more open as kids get older. Of course, the challenges that our world, you know, error and lies know no age. And so if our kids are in the world at all, they're going to be exposed to stuff even when they're younger. And that's been true for our kids, you know, early elementary age and older, they get, you know, all the sexuality, gender, transgender, same sex, all, you know, all that stuff. Our kids have been exposed. In fact, our 9-year-old, we were driving in the car a day or two ago, and he said, you know, what does it mean to be transgender, Mom? You heard that conversation. This is 9. What happens in our home, we got 5 kids. Our oldest is a sophomore. We got a middle schooler. So the little ones get exposed to stuff now earlier than our oldest did because they're watching stuff. But we've just, you know, for us, that has meant we've tried to limit at certain ages and then expand as they've gotten older. So practically, that means our kids don't get a phone or screen, their personal screens, until they're 13. It's a big milestone in our home. We limit where they can go on the internet. And as they get older, then they get more freedoms on the internet. And we limit purposefully the amount of TV that we watch, just because it's not that we have a TV in our living room, and we've been watching the Olympics, and you know, they'll see Johnny Weir, for example, as he's commentating on ice skating, and that created a conversation with all of our kids, 7 and up. You know, what does that mean, and why is he living like that? And and you know, those are just common occurrences in our home. But what I am thinking as a father is I want my kids to engage with the world from a position of strength, not a position of weakness. And by that, I mean, if we open things up too fast for our kids in this arena, they're getting hit with stuff that they don't know and haven't experienced. But we want them exposed to it, but after a season where they've been able to know God's truth, and we're there with them as parents to walk with and talk with. And the hope then is that there really aren't any surprises or big topics that we've not had conversations with and talked about when we launch them into adulthood. And so, you know, think about same-sex marriage, transgender, you think about pornography, you think about and what are right now justice and all the racial issues. You could go down the list, they're long. We want to have those kinds of conversations. So our 15-year-old, our 12-year-old, you know, they're reading news websites now, that they're getting everything that's happening in the world. Usually my sons now are informing me before I read it. and then we're having conversations about the actual events that are happening today. We don't let our kids go on social media until they're a little older. So they don't have social media accounts yet. We haven't crossed that path, but that's another biggie, because that's an influence coming in. Go ahead.
Doesn't some of this just come down to if you really believe that in your faith? So when people would talk to me and they would say, well, I just don't want to influence my kids. We don't do that with any other basic discipline, whether it's mathematics, history, science. There are certain things that you teach as basic foundations. And then from there, you can expand and ask questions about, did we get this right in history? Is this scientific method through observation and interpretation? Is it actually accurate? But if you don't have the basics down, you really can't enter the conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And absolutely. And I'm not the dad that I think there's a lot of, you know, people in their 20s, 30s, 40s whose parents' intention was really good, that I want to keep all this evil and yucky stuff out. And man, you know, you think, what's wrong with that? But they're so, you know, they're living in a Christian subculture bubble. And in doing that, it feels like sometimes young people swing to the other extreme where they go, I didn't get to interact with or experience, and I just don't like that world anymore. And so it's
reactionary living. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a balance. I think it's an art. You know, we purposefully, I recognize that what I listen to for music, what I watch as a dad on television, what I'm passionate about as a parent, our kids pick up on that. And so we have tried to be really intentional about, you know, even the music we listen to. We listen to a lot of Andrew Peterson. We listen to a lot of Christian worship music. But I also listen to a lot of country music that's not Christian. We also listen to, you know, there's some other, you know, we're careful in what we choose. We listen to a lot of the Beach Boys. I like Enya. You know, my kids hear those, and it's not like only Christian, because I think there are a lot of wonderful things that God has created in this world that are beautiful and good and may not be Christian at its core, but they still reflect the goodness of God in different ways. And so our kids get to experience that, and we talk through those, you know, what we're consuming and why we're listening. And it, you know, I think those all impact our kids. So I like what you said, Ezra, if our faith is real, and if it really impacts our entire life and how we think and act and live, it should touch down in our home and outside into our world as well.
Dave, you came at this from a little different perspective. I mean, so your growing up years are probably different from mine. My parents separated when I was 14. And so, Dave, what was your perspective? You were I was homeschooled pretty much K through 12. You were public school?
Yeah, just a pretty small to medium sized public school in Detroit. Mm. And a really good school district. And yet, I mean, I see how that affected some of my worldview and some things that I had to work through, maybe that Ez probably didn't growing up.
Like what?
I think what Josh said, you're exposed to so much so quickly. So I remember the full-on, full classroom conversations about, like, pretty explicit conversations about sex. I mean, just, like, as a full... I mean, not that those conversations didn't happen, but it just... That never happened in my home. That happened in school at a very early age. And that's just... That's a very different model than some of the stuff that Josh seems to be advocating, like this needs to happen in your home, and it needs to happen at the right time, and all these sort of things. Like it was just a very different experience. My concern, I already voiced, is just that somehow I feel for the parent that reads this book with kids about my age, like 11, 8, and 5. So I'm already on the journey quite a bit, and they read through this book and go, "Oh no, I'm not doing half of these things. Where do I start? And I think sometimes the overwhelmedness from a parent would maybe just almost just like, if you've been living one emergency to the next, to put some of this into practice, maybe you could just give us some helpful advice, Josh, if that's
broken somebody homes. Out.
Yeah. Or somebody that's like a single parent that is trying to maybe do the work of two people and just... How do we get someone to be hopeful and not despair about putting some of these things into practice? Would be my sort of question, because, you know, as I read through, there's some of these I was like, man, we're doing great at this, and other things I was like, oh crud, we should really do better at this. And then, like, Jess and I sitting down and talking about, okay, what does this look like for our children? But what if you don't have somebody that's like pulling together with you for some of this? Like, maybe talk about some of that. That was such a terrible question, but
no, so let me talk about overwhelmed and then we'll hit single parents. So overwhelmed, I would say, you know, whether you got a year, 2 years, you talked to 11, you got 7 years, actually parenting doesn't end at 18. So we, technically have longer than that, but let's just use 18 for a cutoff. Whatever amount of years you have, that still is a lot of time. So my almost 16 year old, if I wasn't very intentional until he's 16, 2 years that's a lot of time actually, when you stop and think about what can we do in 2 years. So I'd say take the time that you've got, whether it's a couple years or five or eight or whatever it is, and say, let's make the most of it. What are the most important things that we need to address between now and launch, and just, you know, be proactive in that way with the time that you have left. Every day is a new day. And I look at, there are a lot of examples in scripture of parents who did a good job and a lot that didn't do a good job, and a lot of kids that came from what seemed like horrible situations that turned out to love Jesus, and many of the opposites that you think, okay, they should have turned out better, but they didn't.
Yeah.
So I don't know, there is some mystery involved with how things work. So I think this leads us in part to single parenting and in part just in general. I will say we do the best with what we can with whatever our situation is. And there's a huge trust factor with the Lord. And I believe there also, it's helpful to understand, what is success as a parent? And I think for us as parents, at least the way I answer this scripturally is, are we faithful to do what God has asked us to do as parents? Were we obedient to God? And sometimes I think we look at success is, I raised the perfect child who, whatever that area of success is. And I think things could go south for a child because they made some choices. They've got a hand in how they turn out as adults. And we could still say we did what God called us to do as parents. We were obedient, and therefore we could call that success in God's sight, even though maybe looking at some of the life choices of a child, they wouldn't land where we would hope or where we were working for. On the single parent side, what I found helpful with this book is that it does provide a framework. It's kind of if somebody wants a plug and play quick, it's there. There is a lot of helpful assessment kinds of and planning kinds of questions. And we, a lot of single parents attend the seminars that we do. We found some of the most helpful things is to pair them up with at least one other person to have those conversations, just to be talking through, working through, and getting another perspective. My wife and I have kind of taken under our wing a family that the mother and husband and wife separated, divorced, and the two oldest we've taken them under the wing, and we're working with this single mother and helping her and trying to. We can't replace dad in her son's lives, but we can be another positive influence and speak into. And so, man, these two young boys, they're almost like our sixth and seventh child. They're here a lot. And there's a lot of brokenness. There's a lot of emotional challenges that they bring sometimes because of just what they've gone through. And there just is needs to, there for us, we just realize there needs to be a level of grace that's there. But I would say, if you're a single parent looking at this, who from your church or from your extended family, is there others that can join you in this? And sometimes it's as simple as letting others know, this is a need of mine and a heart cry of mine. My kids, both of their biological grandmothers died many years ago. So my kids don't have biological grandmothers. And I remember stating that at some of the grandparent talks that I do. And it was funny, this area of need in my life as for my own kids, as I said, and just a heartfelt, I lament that my kids don't have the influence of a godly grandmother. And it's been amazing how God has brought surrogate grandmothers into my kids' life. I think in part because I was just vulnerable and shared an area of pain with people. And so my kids have, my 12-year-old son has Miss Nancy, who he calls up pretty much every day on the phone. She's 70 some years old. And, you know, and I think would God potentially provide those kinds of people in for a single home, if that's needed, to come alongside and provide, you know, maybe he would, maybe he won't, but if that's not voiced and let and others know, then it can't happen. And so I'd voice that I really would love some help, and I'd really love to have this female presence or male presence in my kid's life that's not there. And you know, I trust that God will honor that.
Well, and the importance of a local church seems like what you're speaking to there.
Yeah.
Because like I think, you know, for the person that, you know, I think of my mom, you know, she raised us when I was 14, when she separated. The importance of a local church for her was huge, because it's there, like you're sharing, you're able to be vulnerable and share, okay, these are areas that I have need. And that to me is a great place to start for a single parent, where I know different single parents have expressed this, that church can be very difficult. Because some churches, their ministries can be specifically geared towards healthy, great, happy families. And you kind of feel like you're out of the loop when you're a single parent coming in. But if you find a good church where you have some people like that that are willing to step in, and one of the follow-up thoughts I had was if someone's listening to this, watching this, and they see other kids that are having challenges, what are steps they can do to reach out? And especially, I think it's hard, it's tricky, because we live in a culture where in my history, I've seen different times of abuse, like abuse that's happened in the church. And so I think there's always fear that people have of that, and maybe keeps them from helping and reaching out to kids that are in need. So how do you navigate that?
We've just decided that this is going to be an area of ministry for us as a family. So we have invited them in, and we've shared this with the single mom. For us, we've looked at the areas of needs for this young family, and it's the big one for them right now is financial. And so we've just offered to help cover some of the costs that go along with raising kids, these kids, and you know, running their own vehicles and all that stuff. And it, you know, it's over a number of years, the connection that's been had and the openness that's there with these young people is pretty significant now that they're, man, they're not, the, you know, the love of a parent for a child is different than the love of a parent for any other children. But my love for these children that aren't technically mine is very deep, because of, and I tell you, I do a lot for them. I love your comment, Ezra. If you have an intact home, two-parent family, this is a huge need. I mean, the number of broken families and kids that are coming into this world out of wedlock is, it just keeps going up. Who's in your sphere in your church that would benefit from your home and your family? And all it takes, you know, it's just one. We can't meet all of the brokenness and all the needs, but we can impact one. Mm-hmm. And so is there a single family or a single child that you could say, no, I think this is part of what God's called us to for ministry as a family. And for our kids, you know, they don't see it as a ministry because we have tried to help them establish friendships with these young people. And so they come over to play and have fun and hang out and so they're looking at it from a different perspective. But man, it's turning around, and you know, it's a blessing to us at times. So I think that could be a great ministry perspective on the family side of things. And I don't know about you guys, but the kids that I often saw come to faith in church, other children and teens, there was often a strong connection with another family. So rarely, you know, in in a church, you'd see kids come in that their parents weren't Christians or there was significant issues going on at home. Usually there was a connection with another stable family in the church that it was a difference maker for that young person. And so maybe that's your family. Maybe you are the one that you're going to say, we're going to step up here.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
So I'm going to read a couple comments here real quick from people that have chimed in on this topic. I threw out, you know, what was the best piece of advice your parents ever gave you? Jeremy writes, where there are people, there is drama. Don't run the second you hit a problem with people, because where you go, there will be more people. It's good thought. I like this thought from my brother. He said, unless your children have a personal relationship with Jesus, they will never make it with God. It comes from my mom. Crystal writes in, my mom's advice was pick your battles wisely. Well, that's a big one. And I'll finish with this one. Brandon's was, don't put your finger in the electric outlet. Yeah. Some that's sound classic advice right there.
Yeah. No, I do think your mom's advice, Ezra, is critical. This doesn't happen in our own power and in our own wisdom. And we could go through all the work of, you know, doing all these things, but if Christ isn't there and the gospel's not, hasn't done its work in our kids' lives, it's not going to make a difference at the end of the day for them eternally. And so let us not forget the importance of the gospel as the central component, the core foundation in all of this. Sage advice right there.
Yeah. Your book's titled 50 Things Every Child Needs to Know Before Leaving Home. And it's a very, I love the way you've designed it. And I would just encourage your audience. Yeah, Dave, you can be like my floor representative here.
I'm your book model today.
Exactly. I love the way it's represented in outlined. And so it's very straightforward. You can just go through, you know, and specifically 50 things. And my wife and I, we have books that go on like a very ugly bookshelf back behind me. So if your book makes it back there, it's probably going to like Value Village or somewhere. Your book, Josh, is out in our living room with like 5 or 6 other books. So that tells you a little bit about something that we, how we value what you've written. So thank you for coming on today and sharing. Dave, anything you want to end with?
No, just about the resource. What I appreciate is the practicality of it. So, I mean, anything from manners and diet, music, taught to be a lover and reader of great books, I think is, but also how to study the Bible, how to have personal devotions, life skills, relational skills, money management, and it's accessible. That's the thing I like about it. It's not just some sort of philosophical treatise, but it's very easy to read, and most of all, I don't come away sort of despairing when I read it, but it's sort of inviting me under God by the Spirit to sort of see that my kids flourish. And that's what we want for them. But also that doesn't happen by accident. I think, you know, 15 years into marriage now, which I can't believe, and our oldest is 11, I just realized that how much of this, Jess always tells me if I get despairy about something that happened. She said, David, we're farming. We're farming. This is a long process, and most of this is not very glamorous. Like it's not glamorous, but the glimpses that you see into the growth make it worth it. And just seeing them starting to grow slowly into responsible people, and I don't know, the dependence on God and one another in the body. I just thank you for writing this, Josh. And it's been a blessing at our church. I can't wait to see how God continues to use it. And I'd highly recommend anyone in our audience, if you have kids, if you're thinking about having kids, if someday you will have kids, I would get this resource.
We'll link it in the show notes below. You can click on the link to purchase it online. Josh, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to the Monday Christian Podcast, the program that helps you put into action the truth of God's Word that you hear on Sunday to your everyday life on Monday. For more info on this program, simply visit our website, themondaychristian.com. That's themondaychristian.com.